That is the most in-your-face intro, because that's what we do here, Busted Pencils. We're in your face, and if you ever have an opportunity to see us on video, you might be like, please, don't be in our faces, because the three of you are not the most pretty things to look at. And I'm speaking for Johnny and Jacob, and whether they want to argue with me and insist that no, they are camera pudding, I'm going to say that no, they're more like camera vinegar, just like me.
Tim, so, you're so money, you don't even know it. All right, buddy. You gotta get some self-esteem. You're like a handsome Scott Galloway.
All right. I'll take that. Although luckily the camera does not cut below my my man boobs. So you know, it's all there.
Welcome to the Saturday.
Welcome
podcast,
to Saturday. Listeners. One full hour. Yes. And as we always like to point out on the Saturday show, those of you particularly out there in your cars, the number one place where most people still do listen to radio, you're like, what is this? Hey, it's Busted Pencils. It's Tim, Johnny, and Jacob. It's a show about education. Like, oh my God, blackboards, bulletin boards, punishments, writing assignments. No. It's actually about democracy, and we welcome you to keep the channel right where it is, because I think you're going to enjoy a little bit of this if this is your first time. And those of you loyal listeners, thank you every Saturday for being in the car. And as we pointed out last Saturday too, even those of you out in the workshops, doing the things that you do in workshops. We're not even going to talk about the potential of the way that certain sweatpants can be used in those days. We're not going to go there anymore. Jacob's laughing, but man, so much going on in education. I was just thinking, this is a Saturday where, man, we got to get reacquainted with going like, what's happening in the world education news. Again, listeners out there going, wait, there's news about education? Oh my goodness, there's news about education. And you know, got a whole bunch of stories here today. Knowing who we are, though, the chances of us getting through every one of these stories is probably close to not gonna happen. But I'll just point it, you know, give you some of the thoughts out there. Hey, the Department of Education, Linda McMahon has something to say. We want to hear about her. Texas, well, you know, Texas is always doing something. And there's a little bit of a scuffle about what we should be teaching towards that American history. There's a shortage of programs to prepare future butchers. Who knew that learning to be a butcher? Yes. Hey, guess what? That requires an education, right? You just don't go out and shoot your deer and start cutting. You got to know what it is you're talking about. And for anybody in largely the Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota, you know what I'm talking about. You know, if you're like me, I don't mess with that. I hand it over to somebody who knows how to cut the meat the right way. And so what happens though when we don't have places for how to learn to do that, talking about that, and, you know, so much else. And hey, want to point this out, Wisconsin, particularly in Madison, but actually it was mandated that every teacher and administrator be trained on how to teach 1950s style reading. Yes, that's what I'm calling it, or as what other people are saying, the science of reading. And guess what? There are some teachers in Wisconsin who still have not met that obligation. So lots to go on. But Johnny, first and foremost, though, we kind of teased it in the Wednesday show. But hey, President Trump seems like he's making good on the deal that going to close down the Department of Education. And in fact, six different sections of the department have been shuffled off into other federal departments. But Linda McMahon, who is probably one of the most, if not the most, least qualified person, although Betsy DeVos might be up there just as much, the current Secretary of Education wrote an opinion piece for the USA Today. The shutdown proved just how little the Department of Education will be missed. And this is, quote, the very first part of her paragraph in the USA Today. Our nation just experienced the longest government shutdown in its history. Hey, students kept going to class. Teachers continued to get paid. There were no disruptions in sports seasons or bus routes. The shutdown proved an argument conservatives have been making for 45 years. The U.S. Department of Education is mostly a pass-through for funds. Well, they're just better managed by the state. Johnny, is this truly the end of the Federal Department of Education?
Linda, who the hell do you think you are?
Tim, I mean, I don't know. It appears to be, it's been talked about for some time. Actions, you know, help us better understand whether that's happening and how that's going to look. But I hate to say we're in a wait and see position, but that's sort of where I've been following this. Like, let's wait and see. And, you know, we're seeing some action. We're hearing more words, but we're starting to see some action with those words. And, you know, I don't know if it's the end, but it certainly feels as though it's an idea, or I should say more of an idea. It's a function that's going into moratorium, right? This idea, this service of having a federal Department of Education. I think it's served an important purpose. I think it stands to serve an important purpose. And I especially emphasize that in relationship to things like special education and, you know, federal funding. That's been a huge part of, you know, underwriting, literally, you know, funding, you know, public schools in this country, which we know are under attack, but are essentially the bedrock of democracy. So I think it ought to remain, you know, but let's wait and see. And here we're seeing some actions that are showing us that for now, it's at least going into moratorium. It's not there yet. It's not there yet, but they're moving things, right? They're vacating things out and placing them elsewhere. Where exactly, I'm not so sure, because it's a lot of words. And as we're seeing these actions, you know, we remain in this wait and see position. I think as part of that wait and see, having discussions like this, Tim, are so important, not just here on Busted Pencils, right? And for you listeners out there, but especially for, you know, Democratic citizens who are, you know, speaking to their legislators and state legislations that are, you know, working on budgets and thinking through how are they supporting public education. I think there is important advocacy work that needs to happen to amplify these conversations that say, hey, it might not have been perfect, but if we get rid of it, what do we have and what's it going to be like? And so should we or shouldn't we put the Department of Ed into moratorium? Because I don't think it's going to go away, because I anticipate seeing it back if it does. But I think it's, you know, a wait and see doesn't mean just sit on our hands. I think having these conversations in meaningful ways, and, you know, advocacy groups out there and ed scholars and policymakers need to be pretty vocal about the ways, and we see that, the ways our students, teachers, schools, communities, that's you parents out there listening to, right, are going to be impacted by these moves and changes.
Look, yes, all of that, but I'm just going to go with pointing out the reality here, though, too. Why 45 years of hatred towards the Department of Education? I don't know. It's because Jimmy Carter put it in place, and we know that anything Jimmy Carter did had to be bad, and so we have to get rid of it. But what I want to do, though, here, though, is the rhetoric that particularly this administration is using, and yet the reality of what's behind their rhetoric. I think needs to be fully blown out here. So again, quoting from the USA Today, which would be actually directly quoting from Linda McMahon, she says, "I know that education is best managed by the educators and leaders closest to families, because I have witnessed innovative schools and outstanding educators delivering for students across the country. Wow. We will continue to reduce federal micromanagement with every tool at our disposal. The agency has advised states on how to be flexible with their title funds. Listen. And I know there's somebody out there going, that's awesome. That makes sense. Johnny and Tim, don't you want teachers and schools and community members and parents making those hard decisions about what's best for education? Yes, I do, listener. Yes, Johnny does, listener. Yes, Jacob does, listener. However, let's look at the reality of what this administration is also putting into place. They are actually mandating what is not allowed to be taught, something that should be truly at the core of looking at and said. So, yes, I'm talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And in fact, American history. So much for the non-micromanaging, because we now have a federal government that, without a Department of Education, is fully into deep micromanagement at the standpoint of literally changing the curriculum and mandating what specific version of American patriotism, and I'm just going to focus on that one, must be taught by all. And if you don't, even has been floated that the federal education, federal people in charge of education will revoke teaching licenses based on non-compliance. Now, this is the reality that actually comes into focus when you want to hear about, quote, the rhetoric of, we want to give education back to the states, to the educators, to the leaders closest to the families, to build innovative schools, except we don't. This is the reality of the Federal Department of Education. So I guess my conclusion to this is, you know what? I don't really, really care if they're successful. What we need to be concerned about is continued federal overreach that will permeate throughout whether we have a Department of Education or not. And so that's the reality, listener, that you're out there saying, who should make those decisions? Hey, don't be fooled. The federal government is still saying, well, it's actually us who are still in charge. Busted pencils. We're in charge, though, here. Be back in a minute. Yeah, we're back. You know, I tried, guys, just wanted you to know, during that break, I tried to put in a phone call to Linda to ask her if she might want to, you know, come on Busted Pencils and talk about her op-ed. I didn't get an answer, but I got some kind of recording that said, Slecker, if you keep it up. Actually, Linda was going to do a handful of hair to you, but it looked like somebody already did that to you. I was like, wait a minute, that seemed awfully mean, don't you guys, to be picking on me like that? Yeah. Anyway,
was that a real story? Is Linda McMahon going to attack you, Tim?
No, well, she can't do the old, you know, famous wrestling move of grabbing a handful of hair and taking my head into the turnbuckle, because as they pointed out, somebody had already done that to me because I have no hair. They were making fun of a bald guy.
I see. Okay. Maybe this is the old radio hand of me. I was trying to make sure that we mentioned that, you know, Tim is bald for those listeners at home.
And thanks for entertaining my my delusion that actually Linda McMahon would even have an answering machine that would have something to do with my reality. But, you know, again, lots of education news, so keep that going. I saw this one, though, fellas, that I just, who knew, but a dying art, and this is coming out of the 74million.org. Check them out. Education. Yes. Holy crap. A whole national education news site, but title, A Dying Art. With butchers disappearing, high schools look to step in. And so in Montana, Fergus High School program looks to connect kids with their food. Johnny, who knew that cutting meat was a dying art?
I mean, Tim, it makes sense. I mean, I love the idea of like our career pathways and the work we do being connected closer to food. And I certainly think meat cutting, as it's referred to in the industry, right? Butchers or meat cutters, right, you know, is a skill that you learn. And I get excited about this as part of like your high school education, and can even carry into, I think, really creative and innovative, college degree programs. It sounds, I certainly see less butcher shops,
mm-hmm,
right? And, you know, I think this makes sense, especially as a big, strong advocate of, you know, that we should have like local food sources and local skills related to food preparation. And part of that preparation and meats and meat dishes is where we get our meat from. And, you know, I didn't know or particularly even think of it as a dying art or, you know, skill. But obviously, if you don't invest in, you know, recruiting and then teaching, I think traditionally meat cutting taught through an apprenticeship, right? Lots of on the job entry level positions. You start as a meat clerk and you work your way up, and you do apprenticeships that lead to, you know, often certifications that you are required, right? A food handler certification, often required by law in local areas, states and whatnot, makes a lot of sense to me. But I didn't think of it as a dying art or skill, but that makes sense. And man, where there's need, right? We talked about this before. Higher education is part of a market economy, you know, and in supply and demand, if there's not, you know, if there's a demand for it and there's not an adequate supply, then that's an area that we should be looking closely at and being part of it.
What I think is cool, though, about this piece, and you hit on it when you early went on to this, is that, yes, the quote butchering, the art of meat cutting is dying. But actually what this high school really does here, though, is brings home that as this continues, as the preparation of the food that we eat continues to get further and further away from those of us who consume the food, there's also just a disconnect of understanding what goes into getting the food to the table. And so they're bringing forward by using butchering and meat cutting as a skill that they can use to help bring back that sense of not just, quote, having more certified butchers out there, but to bring an awareness back that actually working with food, we might have a more appreciation of the work that goes into giving us the ability to provide and eat. And so I like this idea of this not just being, hey, you know, we need to teach kids to be butchers again. No, it's actually coming from a deeper philosophy, which is a good thing. But it, but there's a philosophy in this, though, too, that Johnny, just for me, has this sense of going like, hey, we need the community, kids, everybody, to understand where your food comes from and what goes into it to get it to that point. And even potentially going, the more and more distant it gets from you in how it then comes back to you, there's all kinds of things that we should be knowledgeable about. And maybe actually the more closely we can get food for us, the more healthy we can be. And you know what? That might even mean actually learning how to cut your own meat. Wow. Told you out there listening, you'd be like, we ain't talking bulletin boards here. We're talking about food, cutting meat. And what's next? Not teaching reading in the 1950s. Busted pencils. We'll be right back. Like I'm being chased around by somebody with a butcher knife when I hear that music. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, talking Linda McMahon, talking butchering. And actually, Johnny during the break found, you know, just to point out, Madison College, Wisconsin, a 1-year artisanal, I think that's how you, or artisanal, depending on how you want to pronounce that, modern butchery program that covers farm-to-table process, meat quality, and preparation. And in Minnesota, Ridgewater College offers a meat cutting certificate and an advanced meat processing certificate focusing on retail, wholesale skills, including sanitation, packaging, and fabrication. And Jacob, as you reminded us too, you know, we've done shows on the lumber industry and the actually wood sciences and actually working at a sawmill and seeing that there are like Madison College, like Ridgewater College. This was the University of Wisconsin. Gosh, which one's way up there now? Anyway, they're in partnership with their wood sciences, University of Wisconsin Superior, right?
That's the one, Tim. It's up there by Lake Superior. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You know, but what's really cool, this is innovation at work here and, you know, bringing local expertise, local skill sets. And saying that, you know what, there are educational opportunities here. And again, keeping the economy, this is the other thing, keeping the local economy going by making sure that we continue to provide local opportunities. So again, you know, hey, you're listening out there too. This is a great opportunity. Let us know about any innovative kind of education types of programs happening out in your, you know, wherever you happen to be listening to this show, whether it's truly in a car on Saturday or if you're listening to it as a podcast. As we always point out, our Finland listeners listening on the podcast, you know, we want to make sure those, and we know there's a lot of innovation going on out there, but let us know how that's working. And you know, though, when we talk about all this innovation, I got to point out that what appears to be innovation or sold as innovation and repackaged as innovation. Yes, I am talking about, if you've heard it, the science of reading. Yes, We have done so many shows on the science of reading. In fact, one of our great and favorite guests, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, has been on a few times to talk about the problem with the science of reading. However, though, a new article that had just come out in the Cap Times pointed out that a lot of Wisconsin teachers have not finished the mandate of being trained in how to teach the science of reading. And I got to say, so what? please keep those ones that haven't had the training, save them in some special place so that when this silliness disappears, that you'll have a few people left who can remember when that the teaching of reading is a very deep art and science that requires lots of professional thought, independence, and an ability to see each kid as a unique learner who may approach reading and words and letter formation in so many unique different ways. And yeah, you know what? I've been thinking about this, the science of reading. Really, this is what they're saying here, listeners. We want them to teach reading like they used to teach reading in the 1950s when all kids could read, you know, like the Leave It to Beaver kids. Everybody in Leave It to Beaver could read. And that's when the teaching of reading, and you think, oh, God, well, there are so many things to, first of all, back when, anytime you hear somebody say back when, realize that their mythology of back when is exactly that, is a mythology. Because back when things were supposedly great, I got a whole lot of people who can tell you that back then they were living in a whole lot of pain and suffering. And so whatever somebody's back then utopia is, was also somebody's back when hell existed. That may be a little rough for pointing out, but you know what? Teaching reading, yeah, we're talking about phonics. We're talking about A says A, B says B, T says T. You put a B and an A and a T together, and that spells ba-ata. Ba-ata. That's it. It's a ba-ata. Tim, what's a ba-ata? I don't know, but if I say phonetically B-A-T together, it says ba-ata. You're like, well, I thought it was a bat. That's what I thought too. But the science of reading would have you know that that's a ba-ata, Johnny. You look confused, my friend.
Well, what's the ba-ata with that? What?
Yeah. So, I mean, less confused, more. You know, I learned to be a teacher and then, you know,
in really, the 50s?
No. Okay. No. But in an era where I think we referred to this, at least in our discussions in classrooms and amongst teachers, you know, talking about the importance of literacy. Like we all agree in a democracy, teaching children to read is really important. And all of us, a certain level of literacy of the written word is incredibly important in the 1950s. It was incredibly important in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. We refer to those what's the aughts, right? And then the 10s. And then, you know, in this era, although Tim, you've brought up before that it might be that reading is still important, but it may be less important to someone's literacy, understanding literacy as a whole, than we used to think it was. That's controversial, but it's a hot take. I'm not saying we don't need to learn to read. But I mean, you've said it before that certainly you read less. I know I read less now, and I know that young people are getting information on a multitude of levels that broaden how I might approach literacy. Right. And this is not me saying we shouldn't teach children to read and learning to read isn't important. It isn't the only way that we get our information. So that there's just a little bit of a changed era. But I loop back around to I learned to be a teacher in the midst of what I think we're talking about back then, Tim, we could refer to as the Reading Wars.
Reading Wars.
Ooh. And I thought, man, if you're listening, Tim, you talked about the Reading Wars there without calling it that. Can you like lay out that? What was that mean? There were two sides to the Reading Wars that for our listener, just giving a little bit of a cultural history lesson in education. Teachers out there, especially veteran teachers, you remember this, Tim. What, tell our listener, break it down, simple words, blue collar scholar style. What are the Reading Wars?
The Reading Wars. There was the vision of what we called whole language, the whole language approach to teaching reading, which was this concept of, you know, and I'd say at its radical form, some people say, well, you know, you don't need to teach phonics. Kids absorb through being exposed to great books, literature, and that actually the direct instruction holds readers back, which then, well, the direct instruction camp, which we're now calling the science of reading, the phonics people said, oh my goodness, we just, you know, just saw the results of whole language, and these kids can't read. Whole language is bringing down a whole nation, and so there was the pushback. The, as you said, Johnny, the Reading Wars. So whole language versus direct phonetic instruction, and as any veteran teachers out there is saying, is going, yeah, I've lived through them three different times, which really points out that it's a continued back and forth battle that actually, to me, and we pointed this out with Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, that the latest attack, though, was not necessarily on whole language, but was on what we were calling balanced literacy. And to me, this was just absolutely a total misunderstanding of balanced literacy, because balanced literacy somehow took on the, oh, it's the new whole language. And actually, balanced literacy was exactly what it sounded like, which said, hey, some kids come to school already reading. We should make sure that they have more stuff to continue reading. Some kids come to school and still need to work with letters and letter sounds. And a teacher should balance that approach. In other words, teach kids that need phonics and word recognition, phonics and word recognition. Teach kids that are already reading more advanced reading critical skills and giving them more access. It was balanced, but somehow, even balanced in today became offensive, because I think it became offensive because part of balance still recognized that there are some kids that don't need phonics. And this is where I'll point out to me, which is the real issue. And in fact, when you move into the readers in the whole language, whole literacy standpoint, you start giving kids access to quality things to read. And that's where it falls apart, because some of the quality things to read, those are some of the things that make some parents uncomfortable. And so what's the easiest way to do away with uncomfortable required reading? Make sure that everybody only gets taught scripted reading lessons in controlled literature assignments that never allow kids and teachers to delve into what it means to actually read interesting, controversial, informative literature. That's the reality. So when I say about the 1950s, please let us go back to the days when we just taught kids to read about Dick and Jane and they didn't have to learn about heteronormative crap.
Tim's using the sarcasm there, just for you listeners that share a lack of sarcasm detector like I do. I'm learning to. Tim, let me summarize really quickly before we go to break, though. You know, what you were saying is the Reading Wars taught us teachers that balanced approach, you know, that we needed more than one tool to address the different needs our students had. And we had an era of teaching that. But Tim, if I might add, the Science of Reading, which by the way, isn't science, that's a brand name, Science of Reading. Science of Reading said, hold on, we could make a whole lot more money if we did away with those two and said, you all have to buy this canned curriculum. That's the Science of Reading, and it's the way, and you need it. So buy this, snake oil teachers, every school district and every superintendent out there, and all the development and certificates and educational materials that cost money with it. It seems like it's a market monopoly move, not a best practice.
Thumbs up. It's Busted Pencils. Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Teachers who teach teachers how to teach. Something about coaches doing some kind of other stuff. Man, we got it all here. But Johnny, man, talk about it. Linda McMahon writing an op-ed piece celebrating the destruction, the dismantling of the Department of Education. A school in rural Montana bringing back the art of meat cutting. And as you point out, actually locally, Madison College in Wisconsin and Ridgewater College in Minnesota. And geez, a lot of Wisconsin teachers haven't been exposed to 1950s reading indoctrination. And as I pointed out, please keep them sequestered until this next round of the reading wars fades away so that you'll have some qualified teachers who can remember back to balanced literacy. Whew, that's a lot of stuff to be pointed, you know, talking about just in one hour here, Johnny.
That's a great conversation on a Saturday afternoon, Tim, and a mini little history lesson in there of what are the reading, what was or are the, you know, reading wars or the reading war. Right. I think that's always been an interesting one to me. Phonics versus whole language, then the balanced approach. And now, you know, the science of reading. To me, I said this at the, you know, as we went to break in the last segment, the most recent iteration of this just feels like a giant market opportunity to say, wait, you know what? We want to standardize it all, because with standardization means, you know, potential monopoly of a market, or at least a lot of profit to be had by those creating materials that are approved and stamped as Science of Reading with a really unique brand, Science of Reading, right? Which I've just looped back around. I was shocked to learn this a few years ago when it really came in under the radar on our show, and we had some literacy experts on, you know, to speak to it, like taught us science of reading isn't really the research on reading. It isn't scientific method applied, scientific consensus, you know, coming together. It's a brand. It's a set of materials that companies have put together, not even educators or educational researchers, to say, you know what, here is the newest, best thing you need in your schools to, guess what, help you be proficient, which is another term manufactured by, right? So I'm talking about like a stacked deck here to grow a market of educational materials, which every principal out there listening, every teacher is like, oh no, we've been through this. Yeah. Here we go again. But Tim, you also emphasized an important piece related to democracy. It's legislatively mandated. Yes. So even really great teachers and principals out there are like, okay, we see this product for what it is. Do we really need this? You know, my grandmother used to always make jokes about paper towels and say, you know, do we really need paper towels? I've got a drawer full of what she called my penis. That's that's like an Italian Americanized slang word for like kitchen towel. Right. Well, I have basically these things, and you go and you buy these rolls of paper towel, silly young people. Right. So is the science of reading the paper towel of the Italian kitchen? Right. I don't know, but I like to remind our listeners, it seems like that to us. But you brought up that key point that legislators, we're in a democracy. Imagine legislators saying, no, You can't use your traditional kitchen towels. In fact, if you do, you'll no longer be allowed in the kitchen. You have to buy paper towels. And it's a similar thing happening, which is why we're talking about it here on Busted Pencils, is because we say here it's our civic duty to say, legislators, come on, are you really here to promote economic growth in educational materials? Are you here to promote literacy? If it's the latter, then stop forcing schools and districts to mandate science of reading.
If they wanted to mandate anything, Johnny, the truest practitioner of any form of science of reading, mandate that Dolly Parton continue to distribute books everywhere, because actually, scientifically, one of the most proven tactics to making better readers is having access to books, lots of books. So legislators, mandate Dolly Parton continue to distribute books and do away with the reading wars, for goodness sakes, because, man, you really want kids to read, give them books. And Dolly Parton is our best example of that right now. So, and with that, though, wow, 1 hour. And you know what that means. Now it's time for your moment of zen. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember to grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, on the Civic Media website. And don't be late for homeroom on Monday. And make sure you catch class in session on Wednesday. And find us on Friday for Producer's Choice. And of course, just like today, tune in at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busted pencils.